hire a guide that's really going to mentor you along the way and go, this is how you do this, okay? This is why we're going to do this. You can cut your learning curve way, way down. We'd play games. We shot each other with bows that we shouldn't have, BB guns. I mean, it's just wrong what we did. Like, I don't recommend it, the danger part, but we did all that kind of stuff. That was how we grew up. The goal was add value, and that felt so much more meaningful than helping a big Fortune 500 company make more money on their bottom line. And it was promoting a lifestyle that I valued. Don't try to be someone else. Be inspired by someone else, but be yourself. Embrace who you are. This is Brian Call with the Gritty Podcast, and you are listening to The Wild Initiative. Stay gritty.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
There's a lot of people that can pull the trigger on an animal, but they don't know what to do with it after.
If you would have told me that a stupid turkey was going to make me get that excited, I would have told you you were crazy.
It's just a skill that you have to perfect over a lot of years.
Hunting is a tribal activity. We've lost the tribe. We can't even hunt together anymore.
Well, the people that are anti-hunting are usually pro-abortion. So kill the people, save the animals.
I just remember riding my horse back to camp with the northern lights and the moose behind me, and I'm like, this is why I've done this. This is as cool as an experience as I will get.
Hi, this is Jim Shockey.
This is Sam Sohol, the public land bus guy.
Hi, I'm Kimmy Greentree.
Hi, this is South Cox with the Western Bowhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is Ben Dedamonte, a.k.a. Shed Crazy.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
All right, y'all, hopping right into today's episode with a giant elk bugle, which we will get. Isn't Phelps on the back of the booth?
Yes, right, he here? Is.
That's why, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll be hearing those all podcast. But here at Western Hunting and Conservation Expo, with a guy I have been admiring for many years, Brian Call, one and only Gritty. Brian, I'm so glad we were able to finally sync up and have you on.
I know. We've known each other for a very long time.
I mean,
the first time I met you was at a Black Ovis backpack hike long time ago.
5 years ago.
And you had, like, you were just radiating L.A., like California city slash country slash hippie. Like, I couldn't quite place you, but you did that hike, and to your credit, It was grueling, and you did it. I think it broke your body.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Like, that, so, I mean, that hike, because the whole thing, I was just like, in L.A., I'm like, I just got to get out. Maybe I'll go, like, try and find some pigs or something, and Everyone started posting. It was at Black Ovis. It was the Subalpine launch event, and
That's right.
Just like a little local thing. Like, it wasn't really meant to be this, like, fly in for this event, but I'm like, flights to Salt Lake City are like $60, you know, just, and I'm like, I don't want to pay for a place to stay. And so I'm like, well, there's a Gritty hike the next day. Screw it. I'm just going to go. I bought this new tent. I have all this new pack and all this gear that I need to test out.
Yeah.
No better time than the present. And so I wasn't too smart, and all I packed were jeans, so that was the first thing. But come into the event, I think I was kind of a bit of a novelty, like the city guy that just flew in for this thing.
You definitely stood out.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, and so I'd been listening to the podcast for a while. Uh-huh. My good buddy, I was like, okay, so what do I need to do? I'm like, I've always wanted to hunt elk. And he's like, well, why don't you? And I'm like, well, man, you know, I haven't been doing this for like 20 years, and, you know, I don't have like thousands of dollars. And He's like, okay, so why don't you hunt elk? And so he started running me through this stuff. And he's like, okay, you need to listen to this guy, Randy Newberg. You need to listen to the Gritty Bowman at the time, yeah, you know. Yeah. And what I always loved about your podcast is I would listen to it and you would ask questions that I would ask. You are genuinely curious about your guests, and yeah, that always came through. So you'd talk with someone and you were genuinely curious to learn about them, and they were questions that I would be interested in and I would ask. It wasn't like the same, always the same stuff that yeah, everyone's asking, and you made things understandable for someone that was new to it. And I mean, there was always stuff that would go over my head, but I would like, I would hear that same stuff and again and again and again, I'd go write it down and learn. But so from day one, like, your podcast was one of the huge inspirations for me in my ridiculous journey into elk hunting.
Right.
And I remember, and you've heard me tell this story a couple of times, but we're sitting in there, you know, there's like a taco truck there and I'm like, oh man, you know, like Brian's going to be there. I get to meet one of my heroes. Like,
yeah.
I don't like, I worked in the music industry. I meet like these giant music right, stars and I couldn't give a shit.
Right. Right.
But I'm like, oh man, I get to meet Brian Cole.
Yeah. Like, it's funny how I figured this out years ago. Like, people want to meet those that kind of made an impact on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a musician who has millions and millions and millions of followers, or sometimes it's a dude down the road that hardly anybody knows, but somehow or another impacted your life in a positive way. It's not really about, you know, so much their, how big a name they are or fame, mm-hmm, or it's really like they impacted me and that makes them someone I'm a little yeah, eager to talk to and meet. And I find it, I feel the same way about certain people in my life that have really impacted me. And so I feel I'm like a little weird around them, and they're, and yet, you know, it always turns out fine. Like, and when I met you, you were kind of,
oh my god, I was so awkward. Like, I just remember you turn around and it was because I was like okay, I'm gonna be, you know, cool, like prepared to meet him. And but it was just so sudden because I didn't see you in front of me in line, and you just turned around, you're like, oh hey, I'm Brian. And I'm like, it was full on like I like froze, and then I had word vomit moment where like, I'm Sam and I run my own podcast and I listen to your podcast a bunch. Like, yeah. It was, and you were such a good sport about it. You know, you took the picture with me.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then, yeah, that hike. And so I went and camped out at the head of that hike. I was like, okay, got to try out this new tent. And you guys were, and I think I told, like, we were just all, everyone was talking. You guys were like, wait, what? Really? All right. And then, yeah. And I had all my gear. Like, everyone kind of brought their packs, packed water, and, yeah, you know, put a minor stuff in their packs for the hike. Me, I had, like, all of my clothes for the weekend, my tent. Like, I brought the stove because it was cold. It was,
yeah,
it was, there was, I think there was still snow on the ground in
serious
a few
hike
spots. Like, I had, like, 50, 60 pounds in my pack from everything. And I was like, I'm in my head, I'm like, I should probably like dump this pack, but I'm like, I can't look like a pussy in front of these guys. Like, just to put it out there. And my only goal was I couldn't be the last guy up. I was the third to last guy up by maybe like 5 feet.
Right.
And I remember, you know, you guys were up at the top, and I just remember both of you looking at me like, how you doing, California? And I looked at you guys and I was like, that is the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And yeah, I don't think you expected it. I think you expected me like, oh, I'm cool, you know, bro.
Right, right.
And I'm like, no, that was horrible. Why would I ever do that?
Yeah.
That was fun, man.
Yeah.
That was, and it's weird seeing like how far everyone's come since then and how things are changed. And like,
if you would have told me you would be doing this podcast and have done the hunting that you've done, it was hard to picture that future, like based on, you know, how much, you know, how new you were to everything.
Yeah.
And then to see it and to become good friends, like you and the Lampers and stuff, it's been, life's a wild ride.
Well, that's why I always say, that's why I started this podcast, was because I'm like, I want to get into hunting. I don't know anyone that does it. Yeah, like I could go to the local Turners and try and talk to some people. And it's like we always say that. Yo, go to your local archery shop. And that sometimes works. But if we're being realistic, there's a lot of dudes that are just going to kind of they may be nice to you for a minute, but you're never going to hear from that guy again. Yeah. You're not going to go hunting with him. And
yep.
I told myself, I'm like, I want to be able to talk to the best people that know this stuff. Like, I want to learn about bear hunting. I want to talk to Ryan Lampers about some bear hunting. And like,
I mean,
and
we kind of had the same motivations, right? Like, and I wanted to have a one-on-one conversation, and I wanted the opportunity to really dive into how they think, what makes them tick, what their experience is. I want to recreate or I want to be able to do the things that they're doing. I need them to unlock the secrets. And so that's when you do a podcast, that's the opportunity, right? You get that one-on-one. Both people are committed to the conversation. Yep. And I think and it's more meaningful to me than an Instagram post. I'd rather listen to a one-hour conversation than just post something on social.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's...
or see something on social.
This has opened up so many opportunities for me. Like, I mean, the stuff I've done, for the most part, the success... Wow, I can't say that word. Success I've had has really been, if I track it back, has been because of starting this podcast. And I mean, everything that surrounds it. Like, just the confidence it's given me to go talk to people. And I remember my first trade show and, like, meeting Christy Titus.
Yeah.
And I was like, same kind of thing. I was just like, you know, I don't know if you got time or anything. Like, you know, I kind of have this podcast. I've only released 2 episodes, but like, if you got time, you know, Christy Titus is like the sweetest person on earth.
She
like,
is, yeah.
And she introduced me to a bunch of people, and you know, it's wild. Just thinking about the access that it's given me to people. I finally harvested my first elk. Not this last season, but the season before.
Yep.
And again, I track that back to the people I've met in the industry, the things I've learned from running this podcast, the opportunities, you know, I mean, hanging out with Cody Rich, and he's giving me tips, like when I was on my Montana hunt, you know, and talking, you know, crashing at Ryan and Hill's pad before I lived in Montana, you know.
Yep.
It's some crazy stuff, man. It's been a wild ride, but...
What would you say has been you know, you got your first elk. What's the big thing that made that happen compared to where you weren't successful?
A big help was having a guide. I went with John Stallone. He was a buddy. But I mean, there was a lot I learned up until then. And it is very like clear the progression from every elk hunt that I've done. Every time I got closer and closer and closer, you know, till 2019, I was like in elk. I was drawn back on them. I couldn't quite seal the deal. But I finally knew that I could do it.
Yeah, right.
I knew that, like, it was a real possibility in my future. And then I drew Arizona on 3 points. Went down. And I was like,
awesome.
I want to get a bull. Like,
yeah.
I really want one this year. I drew Arizona. So I called up John Stallone. He's a buddy. And, you know, again, through the podcast.
Yep.
He's been on my podcast, like, 5 times, 6 times. And
John's got that accent.
Oh yeah, there's just it's hard not to love and hate John at the same time, you know. And he would fully agree with that statement.
Yeah, yeah.
He is so unapologetically him. He's
total
such
character.
A character.
I love the guy.
But you know, it was a tough hunt. Fishing Game was saying it was the worst rut in like 17 years.
Yeah.
Something stupid.
That was a year we couldn't hardly find. It was just droughty and nasty.
Oh, it was dry and. They bugle for a little bit in the morning, and then they just take off, and they nothing wanted to fight. They just you would bugle at them, they'd take their cows, pick up, and take off.
Yeah,
like it was ridiculous.
I heard that, you know, I've always told people, I got lucky. I got to go on a lot of guided hunts at a certain as my podcast grew and got more popular. I had a few companies say, "Hey, we want to take you with us on this trip."
Yeah,
we're gonna take you here. We're gonna take you there. We're gonna take you. And I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna say no. Let's go do this. And when you realize, when you hunt with a guide, their guides hunt 5, 6 months, 8 months out of the year. They might have, they might be responsible for helping hunters take some 20 to 40 animals in a season. I mean, most of us get to hunt a couple of animals maybe. So they come with a vast level of experience. Mm-hmm. And if you hire a guide that's really going to mentor you along the way and go, hey, this is how you do this, okay? This is why we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. You can cut your learning curve way, way down, especially when you're hunting a foreign animal or a foreign species, like a foreign place, like Kodiak Island for Sitka Blacktop with Cole Kramer. It's like, wow, I learned a lot, you know. Now I could go back and I could put those pieces together and, you know, you're on top of it. But I think it's great that you got that. And then there's something about, I say this all the time, sounds bad, but killing begets killing.
Yeah.
Or success begets success. There's something about you need to have that success to know, yes, I can do this and I can make it happen again. You'll notice that a lot of guys just don't kill an elk, or whatever they're after. And then finally they do it. And all of a sudden, they're doing it every
two
other
out of 3 years,
yeah.
Kind
then,
of a thing, yeah.
Then the next thing you know, they're doing it, you know, almost every year, mm-hmm. or it becomes that they rarely don't do it. And they'll go 10 years on this thing without any, and then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, boom, and you'll notice like it's the one success kind of begets more success.
Well, I think so much of what it is like, you know, we always talk about like, I've learned more from my failures than I ever have my successes. And so I've learned a lot, a whole lot. But it gets to a certain point where you have to have that success to get to that next level of learning. Because you learn all the things not to do, but then you get to this point where it's like, okay, now I need to know what does work. Like, you know, and refine that. And so then once you finally get that measure of success and you... or that little bit of success, you can then contextualize a lot more of what you learned in those failures. And I think that's why then you suddenly start becoming a lot more successful afterwards. And I mean,
there's
the huge confidence boost. There's so much that goes with it. You know, I think there's it's a perfectly valid
confidence
comment.
Is huge. Yeah. Huge. Believing in that you can do it. That's huge.
Oh yeah. Like, well, it keeps you out in the field longer. If nothing else, you'll stay in the field longer if you're confident you can kill something.
Yep.
And what kills more elk? Time in the field.
Yeah.
Like, more than anything else, the more time you spend in the field, the more likely you are to kill a bear, kill an elk, kill a deer, whatever you're trying to shoot in the face.
Absolutely.
You know?
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations, and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
So, I would love to know what inspired this for you? Like, what... got you into the outdoors and hunting and really like developed that passion for you?
Well, I grew up on some acreage out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon City. My parents bought this land my aunts and uncles and my grandfather, my whole family bought this huge compound basically.
Okay.
like 40 acres, 5-acre lots. And they all went out there, carved in roads, built houses, and basically homes, like just made this family compound, basically, in the sticks. It's real, like, cultish, you know.
my family may or may not live in a similar area. All adjoining plots of land.
Yeah.
And I always refer to it as the compound.
Yeah.
And they are like, stop it. You make it sound like a bunch of religious crazies.
Right.
Well, you are a bunch of religious crazies. We all are. So
we ended up, I ended up growing up out there. My cousins were my best friends. And we had some neighbors, friends, as people we hung out with. But we're catching crawdads, spending all days outside. When I first moved out there, my parents lived in a tent, a wall tent, while they were developing the land.
Okay.
And so we parked out there. We slept in the Volkswagen van sometimes when it got real rainy. And that went on as they developed the land and got the septic put in and cut the roads in. And
I mean, how long are we talking here?
Like, that was first grade, you know, and throughout all of first grade, mostly in the tent. Then after that, they got a little, they got it kind of done, and they got a little double wide pulled out there and parked out there. And I grew up in that little trailer. And my parents were young, you know, they had me when they were just barely 17.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they, I had real young parents, like, you know, and I mean, young.
So here's a question for you. Could you imagine a couple of like 17, 18 year old single parents like doing something like that nowadays?
No, I mean, I think, you know, we had back in, the internet has ruined lives. Social media, modern technology has ruined society. I'm just going to say, I think the 80s and 90s were the best. Everything after 2000 started to go downhill slowly.
See, as an adult, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I grew up with minimal, none. Yeah. I mean, like,
look,
I grew up on a DOS prompt computer.
We had Atari, and yep. There was like a couple of games. And Pac-Man, right? There was like, that was it.
Yep.
And we didn't even get to play it. Like, the parents wouldn't let us have it. That's rotting your brain, you know? I mean, so we lived in a trailer, okay? Well, your mom's like, get the hell out of the trailer, okay? I don't, you're all living on top of each other. So what do? When we're outside, rain or shine, wet or winter or what? It was just you did things outside, and your activities were all outside-oriented. We'd catch crawdads, we'd climb trees, we'd build forts, you know, we'd throw rocks, we'd catch frogs,
mm-hmm.
snakes. Like, that's just what we did. We'd play games, we shot each other with bows that we shouldn't have, BB guns.
Probably got a BB lodged in my leg somewhere still.
It's just wrong what we did. Like, I don't recommend it, like, the danger part, but we did all that kind of stuff. That was how we grew up. So for me, as I got older, I was always into the outdoors because I didn't know anything else. We camped outside all the time. It was just mm-hmm. natural for me. And then I hunted, you know, we'd go out with my aunt, uncle, my grandpa, my dad, everybody wear orange, and you get them some crappy tag. And you'd have 2,000 hunters all descend on a 4-day hunt on this one unit, and then guns would go off, everybody shoot a spike, and then the hunt would be over. And, you know, and I loved it, and we got horses, and we would, as I got to be a teenager, 14, 15, 16, 18, I was riding horses in Snake River area of Oregon, Eastern Oregon, La Grande, and we would be riding horses out there, hunting elk, and we were just riding around. We didn't know what we were doing. I look back at, we didn't know what we were doing. We wandered around with guns, and then when we saw something, we'd shoot it. We busted our cans, we worked hard, and we shot critters where no one else would shoot them because they're hard to pack out, but we'd find a way. So I was always into that. It was never a time where I wasn't into that, but I wouldn't say I was skilled at any of it. I just did it, you know, duck hunted, all that kind of stuff. So as I was getting older and I was doing archery more and just into hunting, I went to different. I went to Prince of Wales Island for black bear. I went for Sitka blacktail and other animals, and it just sort of expanded.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a great job. I was making six-figure income. I was working from home 3 days a week. I was my own boss. I was doing finance, accounting, and I was the IT change director at an insurance company, big Fortune 500 company. And I was just doing, like...
You're just getting by.
I was just doing film on the side for fun.
Okay.
And I was filming some stuff because I got bored. I got bored with all my free time and all the money. And I'm like, I had no debt. I did the Dave Ramsey, get out of debt. I had my 6 months of expenses. I had good retirement being built, and everything was just cranking. And then my wife got cancer in 2014, and the cancer, it kind of like what devastated me. I didn't know, you know, we didn't know. You never know with cancer, and we didn't know if she was going to live or die.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all that wealth I had been building and the trajectory I was on and the things I was doing really didn't matter to me at all. I would trade all of it for her to be okay. Like, I realized how fleeting and meaningless income was. Like, what I wanted was more to have spent more time outdoors or doing what I enjoy, spend more time with her, more time just not working.
Yeah.
And I look back and I'm like, she was going through chemo, and I ended up being at home a lot, and the company was very gracious, helping me work from home far more days a week than I normally would have. Like, I was literally not at work for weeks at a time in the office.
Yeah.
I did really good work, though. I delivered. I got work done remotely, and I was efficient. So my bosses loved me. And what it enabled me to do is have that freedom, because I proved to them I don't need to be here to deliver. And they knew that. So then I've always said, leave me alone. Judge me by my deliverables.
Yep.
Leave me alone. Don't worry about when I show up, when I don't, how many hours I work. What do you want done by what date? Judge me by that. Leave me the hell alone otherwise. And they're like, okay. So that's kind of how it went. So I still got things done, but I started filming, and I decided to podcast too, because I just wanted to pursue hunting and the outdoors more. I wanted to tell more people about it. I wanted to learn more about it. So I just started filming and podcasting on the whim towards the end of Suzanne's chemo treatments. And I knew she was probably going to be okay now. And I was like, I launched that thing, and it started to climb really quickly. There wasn't anything else. I was first to market. You know, when you think of hunting podcasts, I was right there on the ground level, one of the first shows to do it. There's only a couple guys ahead of me, and then after me, a couple more. And so I got to, from the ground level, do this thing. And I had a vision for how I want to do it, and I just did it my way. And it grew. It took off, and it was really fun, and it was a fast ride. I got swept up into, you know, attention right away. Companies, brands, people. Within a year or so, I had to make a choice to quit my job and do it full-time or not. I had Joe Rogan on my podcast because I was at one of these shows. Cameron Haynes brought him over, and we started talking. And I'm like, you want to sit down? Just like we are right now. And I'm like, he's like, yeah. Sits down. Joe Rogan podcast. He sits down with me, and he takes my show from like 50,000. It's like at 15,000 downloads a show or something. To like 75,000 to 100,000 downloads. Jeez. An episode for, like, it just blew my mind. And all of a sudden, it was like we talked about it, people knew about it, you know? And so it was really cool. It was really cool. It was a fun ride. And there wasn't anybody else really doing it, so we kind of held the market, you know?
Yeah.
And it was fun. I got to know almost everybody in the industry. I had a good time, and I quit the job and did it full time. And I remember the first time, like, being totally independent and going, never forget how this feels. Never forget how this feels. Like, it'll be easy to complain about your work a year or two from now after you're spoiled, you know. But right now, just remember, no one's telling me when I have to go to work or when I have to come home, which they didn't really anyway, but still, I'm like, I'm literally free, 100%.
You're not beholden to anyone. Nobody. Except for yourself.
Nobody. And that was, for me, that was utterly liberating. So I'm like, here I go, you know. And then it continued to grow. And I quit my job, and my wife was better, and I just started, my thought was, when I did the podcast, both the film and the video, I was like, just add value to people, like, best you can, like, bring value, whether I'm teaching you how to be healthier, how to get out of debt, or sharing with you things that help me on hunting and stocks, or the weapon I use, or how I shoot my bow. I share a personal struggle with maybe a target panic or something, and then walk you how I got through it, or I had a knee problem, or I didn't have that, but these issues, right? And you walk people through them, and they feel really empowered because you made a difference to them. So the goal was add value, and that felt so much more meaningful than helping a big Fortune 500 company make more money on their bottom line. It was more tangible to me, and it was promoting a lifestyle that I valued. So the whole thing was like, that's kind of the package deal, like why I quit, how I did it, why I did it this way. And we're all on a journey, right? I just want to learn all the time. I'm hungry to learn new things all the time. And if I ever stop learning, that's when I'm ready to just go to the grave. Like, there's always new things, new avenues. So I push myself in the podcast space, in the film space, the YouTube space, the business space, you know, the manufacturing space, you know, the hunting space. You know, I want to accomplish things on the mountain with my backpack and the do-it-yourself approach on public land with Ryan. I want to go, the two of us, to go do things that seem impossible and then achieve it, you know?
But, I mean, you look at, you know, you talk about adding value and inspiring, you know, inspiring these people to do things. And, I mean, like, again, we talked about this at the beginning of the podcast. You inspired so much of what I've done. Listening to your podcast, watching the videos you put out, you know, reading your gear lists. Like, I mean, so much of what I've done in my hunting career, for lack of a better term, has been inspired by you, by Ryan, by a lot of people surrounding you as well. And we have a loud band starting up at the Mountain Ops stage right now. But I think about that, and I've had people then come up to me and say, like, hey, man, I would have quit hunting years ago after years and years of no success. I would have quit if it wasn't for your podcast. That's secondary because of you. Like, you think about, you know, you may think about the people you directly affect, but there is so many more beyond that. Like, all of the people that you've inspired to hunt that then take other people to hunt. It's just exponential how we can, doing this stuff and sharing our experiences and being authentic and telling these stories and just, as you said, providing value, regardless of what that is, how just expansive you can make this and how much joy you can bring to people. And, like, a guy that's been listening to my podcast, he started around the same time I had. I just had him on recently. Zero success. He was not finding any success. And he was struggling through it. He's like, Sam, I would have quit years ago if it wasn't for your podcast and you sharing your failures. And just recently, he drew the governor's tag here in Utah, and he filled his very first tag on a big old bull moose. And it was like, it was the coolest story, you know, and he even used one of my knives to notch his tag too. And it, like, that meant so much to me. And it's just, it's wild. Because I still feel like it's my first week podcasting some days. Like, I still feel like I'm that kid getting off the plane, hopping on the train up to Salt Lake and, like, going on that hike in my blue jeans. And I still feel like that all the time.
I feel like that's authentic, right? Like, my word of advice for anyone who's going to create content, whether it's films or podcasting or any of that stuff, you'll have someone say, well, don't act this way. It's awkward or cringy, or don't say this thing, or I don't like it when a guy screams and yells after an animal is shot. Like, I'd rather him be quiet and calm. And I'm like, shut up. Mm-hmm. Just be yourself. If you're the guy that loses his mind after he shoots an elk, be the guy that loses his mind. That's who you are. Just do you. If you're the guy like Ryan that shoots it and is like, you can't tell if he's happy or not. that's authentic. That's you. Like, that's, you know, that stuff, like, don't pretend or don't try to be someone else. Be inspired by someone else, but be yourself. Embrace who you are. Like, don't sweat, like, trying to, because it's not authentic.
Yeah.
That's not you. Be your authentic self, and that will connect with people.
Well, and you're, you know, we always talk about respecting the animal or whatever that happens to be. And if you're not authentically, you know, the person you are, you're not doing any of this process, the story, the animal, any of it. You're not respecting any of that.
Yeah.
Because then you're trying to prove something, or you're trying to, you know, you're trying to I don't know, just create this persona that you aren't. You're being fake about it, and that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
That doesn't provide respect to anything. So it's like, okay, yeah, if you are the guy that hoops and hollers, some people may not think that's respectful. But if you try and hold that down, you know, that is authentically you, and that's what's going to do respect to the
yep.
the animal, whatever that happens to be. But, you know, I've been watching a lot of the videos lately, and, you know, you guys have been on a, I feel like it's been a bear kick lately, like, which I love because, again, people are probably sick. Like, the past probably 5 podcasts, I've been like, I love hunting. I want to hunt bears so bad. Like, and because it's what inspired me. It was one of the very first things. It was elk that got me really out into the woods. Yeah. But bear, it was like, that was one of those first things that got the gears turning because I saw in the regs, like, there's an archery bear. I'm like, that is man right there. Archery bear. And, you know, now it, like, seems like this. I mean, now, if we're telling you, there's a difference between going into Alaska and hunting a brown bear with your bow versus, you know, a black bear, whatever it happens to be. But it's just, it has always been in the back of my head, one of these things. And so just watching, you know, all your videos and getting to hear some of the stories, like, behind the scenes before they're fully announced. Like, I love that inspiration because I've got a buddy coming out. And he's always been interested in, you know, he's had a gun, he shoots, but he's never been hunting. And he was supposed to come out in January for waterfowl.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out. And so he's like, well, what can we do later in the year? And I'm like, well, it'll be more expensive for you as a non-resident, but we got spring bear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the likelihood of us getting something is going to be a lot lower than if we have go out and sit in a duck blind and plug like a bunch of Canadas. It's going to be more intense. You're going to have to be more ready. And he's like, that sounds awesome. He's like, he understands. Like, he's like, I know we may not even see anything. It's going to suck. He's like, but I want the experience. And so I'm excited.
There's something about being out there with a tag in your pocket and the possibility, right? And, but that's a good attitude to have because that's kind of how it is. You don't know. There's no guarantees.
Well, and especially when you're going with me, that's hunted bear maybe twice. Like, I've gone out and not seen much success at all.
Well, the thing that is, it's good to note is that, you know, sometimes we go out and we hunt and we will go 5 days and not see a single bear on a 10-day hunt. And people are like, they see our videos, and I try to make that clear, you know, because I want people to understand. But, you know, on a couple of these hunts that were 10 days long, we only saw 2 bears that were shooter bears, and they're the 2 we shot.
Yeah.
That was it. Thankfully, we saw 2. And last year was not a great year for me on the first leg. I got a small bear. I wanted the bear because I wanted the meat, and I had 2 tags. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to take this because it's been days. And it was mature enough, you know, so I took that bear, but that was it. That was that's my least productive bear hunt in years. Then a couple weeks later, we were in another spot and I shot a giant bear and it was a great experience. But so people, they'll be successful and then they won't be. That's just part of it. And especially with bear, you'll feast and famine. There'll be times where we see like 5-6 bears a day and they're everywhere and we just keep finding them. Then there'll be stretches where we don't see a bear for 6 days.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Bears are one of those things. I feel like you just need to be where they are. Like, I mean, with any animal, you have to. But I feel like bears are just a little more all over the place. I mean, is that like a fair statement? Or?
Yeah, that's why. If you can get in the country where the green up is just happening, right, like where the only places that are green are just the ones that are perfect. Like right when they're coming out of their dens, you got about a week or two where it's green right then and there. and that's when you're going to hit it. You know, and that's when you want to hit that green. If you don't, if you miss that window, everything turns green. Now they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But when you get there, when there's only two spots that are green, you'll find four bears on the same green spot.
That makes a lot of sense.
So yeah. I always say, err on the side of going too early on bear hunts. I found it's yielded better results than going too late.
Yeah.
Too late is tough. Too late is when you hardly see bears, can't find them.
It's actually really helpful for me because I'm right in the process of figuring out when to schedule my buddy to come out. So I'll definitely have to drag him out right at the beginning of the season. You know, I'm gonna look.
I like late April or the first week of May.
Well, I've been talking with Livesay, he talks mostly about elk.
Yeah.
But so much of that data, especially like when he talks about the late season hunts and the snow layers and all of that stuff and finding where that snow melt is.
Yep.
That's huge for bear. And we kind of talked about that a little bit on the podcast I did with him. But being able to find, like you said, that little spot of snow melt and looking through that historical data to know when to schedule your hunt so you have a better chance of like, okay, likelihood is it's going to be green, then let's plan for that. That's a fantastic option.
Yeah.
But, you know, a bear is always one of those things that it's always fun to talk to people about because you get those weird reactions, man.
Well, I feel like predator hunting is way different than hunting ungulates.
Mm-hmm.
It has a different feel, and it's special. I think it's special.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm kind of happy that Ryan and I kind of were like a lot of people like, I don't want to sit over bait. I don't want to do this with bear. I don't want to do that. And it's like, no, you can spot and stalk bear. You can go into the mountains. You can experience nature in a really rugged way. And I think we showcased that, and now people see bear hunting in a different way than they did before we started producing a lot of this bear content.
Yeah.
And now I think there's a groundswell of support and interest in pursuing black bears and eating the meat that wasn't there 10 years ago, and it's great to see.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know how it is. People, the second you say bear, people immediately start to turn their nose up. And, you know, they're like, they would never imagine you would eat that meat. And first thing I tell them is, like, the people I know would take bear meat over deer or elk just about
every day.
Like, I mean, you talk with Lampers.
Yep.
Gosh, that dude, I've eaten more canned bear meat from that guy's house.
Yep.
that's also my favorite, to see the reaction. It's like, when you tell people, it's like, oh, yeah, canned bear meat, that's like the bomb.
Yeah, it is.
And they're like,
I know. Who would have thought?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. All my friends, though, are still, they're still a little questionable when I talk about the bears.
You just got to get a bear and then can it and then have it for dinner, and they will completely be converted.
That's the thing I love doing, and it's, you know, I've talked about this before where kind of, you don't lie. Like, I'm not, like, pulling a fast one on them, but, like, I'll cook a meal for people, and I won't tell them what it is. I'll tell them afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, you cook you get a nice elk loin steak, you know, and you grill it up with a good rub, and, you know, you get it nice and tender, and they're never gonna turn that down. Like, it's juicy, it's good.
Yeah.
And you're gonna be like, yeah, this is that elk that I shot, and they're like, holy shit. Like, really? And moments with my family, like I had a javelina that I turned into barbacoa, and it was just that moment of like sitting around watching my whole family eat. It wasn't like this big, like, this is wild game and let me talk to you about the North American model of wildlife conservation.
Right.
Like, it wasn't that. It was just looking back and knowing that I fed my family and they're all enjoying it like they would any other meal.
Yep.
It was the simplicity of it that I think made it more special. It was the fact that they weren't eating it because it was this wild game meal that I prepared and I harvested with my own hands. Like,
I totally get it.
There's some amazing about that. And I feel like the food has converted a lot of people.
Absolutely.
But
the adventure is important, but the food is that universal thing that people really connect with.
They can immediately latch. Because, I mean, what's the first thing somebody, you know, asks you, when, like a non-hunter that asks you when you hunt, it's like, oh, well, you know, okay. Like, as long as you eat the meat, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing you'll get. And then they can connect a little bit after that with the adventure and the work you put in. They recognize that. But it's that food, you're right, that absolutely connects them to the podcast. Because it's such a universe. I mean, we all eat, you know. Some people eat more than others, and some people make poor choices in what they eat, but we all eat, and I feel like everyone can enjoy a good meal and appreciate that. So.
Absolutely.
But, so if folks wanted to find Gritty, find the podcast, find the videos, find all of the bear stuff, where can guys look?
Well, you can find me on YouTube on Brian Call Gritty. Just Google Brian Call Gritty. You'll find the YouTube channel.
Yep.
And on that, you know, in our Gritty Films playlist, you can find a lot. You can go to briancall.com, and then you can find me on Brian Call, Brian_Call on Instagram. And it's with an I, B-R-I-A-N. And those are the places. Lampers and I have a Gritty Stealthy community, Ryan Lampers, Stealthy Hunter. On locals.com, where people can subscribe and get it's like $7 a month, and they get access to tons of exclusive film, and we do tons of live streams.
Okay.
So it's kind of cool. I'm not going to do that. We don't do that stuff live on YouTube, but we do there. And so it's a cool community. We have all our friends and buddies and people who've joined up get on there, and they're like typing in during the stream, and it's very interactive. It's really fun. And then, like I said, we do exclusive films. We did a two-part series just a little bit ago on a monster muley hunt that was awesome.
Nice.
We did a lot of giveaways and free gear, and we do that too. I just know how YouTube has been, and iTunes and Spotify, and it's like everyone is out there to cancel stuff that they don't agree with.
They're looking for a reason.
And there's just a lot of people who want to cancel hunters. And especially the more mainstream platforms like YouTube demonetizing our hunt shows and stuff. So I'm like, look, we got to build a new home. Not because we've been canceled, but because they might. I don't trust them. So we've built this whole new space over there. And so that's to get there, you just go to gritty.locals.com.
Awesome. Well, I will make sure to link to all of that. You know, so I always like to close out with, say you run into some Californian in a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
Clearly never been hunting in his life. And he's like, man, you know, like.
If I remember, there were some chains, too.
And was I wearing a necklace? Dear
big
Lord.
Old chain with, like, I don't know, was it a Mercedes-Benz medallion or something? Oh,
I mean, there's a good chance I was wearing a cross necklace. Like, oh man, that was just I've got that picture.
I think he had cowboy boots too. I can't remember.
I've got that picture in this.
I love it.
No, I was wearing
flip flops.
No, I had to have had hunting boots. No, I guarantee you, I was wearing hunting boots because I had but I was wearing the heaviest, hottest pair. I was wearing the Crispy Hunters, the like full like 12-inch
on a summer hike.
On a summer hike, because it's all I was like, when I was buying a pair of boots, I was like, I need a pair of boots because I can only afford one that will literally work for. Best for four seasons, and I'm like, I'm gonna have to sack up during the hot months, but it is what it is. But yeah, anyway, but you know, say a guy has never been hunting in his life, clearly comes up to you and it's like, hey, I've always been interested in this, but like, I don't know, there's a lot to buy, there's a lot to learn, there's just it's maybe it's a little too much for me, I'm a little, maybe I shouldn't. What encouragement would you give that person?
I would say you know, when we went out and we hunted, we would go out with a Walmart 10 that we got for $20. Not even Walmart, it was Kmart. And we'd bring peanut butter and jelly and we'd just go. I think it's really just go. Just don't sweat it. Just do it. And they say your brain, like new experiences cause new neurons to fire. And your brain expands and stuff. There's something about just going out and doing it little by little, and too many people are let the I don't know how to do it hold them back. It's like, figure it out.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out when you're there. Like, just start.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm really glad we finally got to sit down and do this. You're still my hero.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, Brian Cole.
Appreciate that.
Thank you so much for hopping on, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.